Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome a very accomplished and senior professional from Berlin, Germany, Mr. Philipp Horvath. Philipp, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thank you for inviting me and for sharing wisdom with the world.
Thank you. Philipp is a partner at Luman and he's a culture catalyst. He's created multiple startups and has co-founded a nonprofit for conscious creativity. He has been integrating frameworks from various transformational modalities and perennial wisdom traditions with the latest findings in science. So Philipp, before we talk about Luman and the work that you're doing, tell me about your journey and what brought you to India so often.
Well, India was one of the destinations I've always wanted to go as a child because it seemed very interesting and intriguing. And then I initially actually wanted to go there to study yoga, and that didn't work out. And then I wanted to go visit my cousin who was staying there, and that didn't work out. And then my boss said, hey, I have a project for you in Chennai. You want to go? Mm-hmm. And so I ended up doing some work in Chennai for iSoft back in the day, and did a project there for a few months and got to, you know, see India for the first time and fell in love immediately. And ended up staying some months in Auroville, down in the south in New Pondicherry. Mm. And then came back years later because my friend was organizing an arts and culture event in Delhi, a contemporary arts and culture festival, which was one of the first at the time even. And she said, come see this. And so I came to see it, and it was beautiful, and I fell in love again. And then ended up staying in Delhi for a moment and worked there for a bit, and then worked in Bangalore for a bit. And traveled, you know, a little bit up towards Himachal and Arunachal Pradesh. And I just love the country, and I owe a lot to it. You know, Arunachal Mataji has taught me a lot. So I'm
amazing.
Very grateful.
Thank you. Thank you. So, Philipp, let's talk about Luman now. And you are providing frameworks for leaders of the future. How do you define companies who are dedicated to creating the future and committed to leaving a legacy?
Well, if you think about the reasons of why you have a business, most people would say to make money for your stakeholders, right? And at this point, we become aware that stakeholders are a very, very limited group. And really, it's shareholders and stakeholders is really everybody in this world. Mm. But the planet is one too. And we're beginning to see some of the drastic weather events that are happening. You know, last year, there was birds falling out of the sky in India. And here in Germany, it's 40 degrees Celsius, which never was the case when I was a kid. So we know things are changing there. And at this point, you can't deny that we're all part of this, right? Mm. Every one of us is part of that problem, right? If you're not part of the solution. Mm. And so I think, you know, future forward companies are the ones that are recognizing that making money absolutely is necessary if you're a business, because otherwise you don't have a business. Right. But that's an insufficient motivation that you need to do more today. Right? I'm going to give a talk in Japan in the near future on regenerative economy. That's really all about looking at how can we make business a force for good in the world, right? How can we actually create the future using the vehicle of business rather than making money its own purpose. And even those studies from McKinsey, for example, show that if you just look at the KPIs of our business, just look at the financial metrics, mm-hmm. then our product quality and service quality erodes. Well, so we create crappier and crappier products with, you know, less and less happy and less healthy people, mm-hmm. you know, and that doesn't seem to be good for anyone, not for the people, not for the planet. Right. And so I think really future-oriented businesses are the ones actively wanting to create the future through their work.
Thank you. And how do you envision the future of work in the next decade?
Well, I mean, it's going to drastically change. I think the key thing is that whatever has been repetitive and automated can be automated. Mm-hmm. But if you think about, you know, we've already advanced with machines. We have robots in our factories today that build cars much faster than humans can. Mm. Right, and we're going to have more and more of these robots. And now we have the addition of generative AI, of IoT, right, and the convergence of those technologies is going to essentially obsolete any repeatable process in a company that's based on rational decision making. Mm. So what I need now is people that can do more than move something from point A to point B, whether it's, you know, break, or whether it's a piece of information or an email or an Excel spreadsheet. Right, I need to actually have what the AI can't have, because the AI can mimic a socialized individual now who knows what the right word should be next, right? And can create from there. But it doesn't have autonomy. It doesn't have a self-offering self. It has values and cares. Mm. And that's where the human advantage lies, and where I think that the work of the future will be focused much more on these higher human capacities like creativity, imagination, problem solving, and also on the values we want to then make sure are represented in the variables in our algorithms.
Well said. And how do you think automation and artificial intelligence will impact the job market and the way we work?
Well, we have that in between time. We have to figure out how to get through, right? Because we have essentially about 65% of the adult workforce who are still looking for an external authority to tell them who to be. Right? They're still looking for their job description and saying, hey, then my boss said I should do this, therefore I'm doing this. Now we need people who are actually doing this because they want to, right? Because they see that it's the right thing. Because an AI can do that too. And I don't need an AI for that. Right? And if I think about like a lot of the jobs that today are marginally, you know, technologically feasible, they will be feasible technologically very soon to replace. But it's especially going to be the higher cost jobs, right? Financial advisor, lawyer, doctor, you know, a lot of the things that, you know, our parents told us would be the good jobs. A lot of those are actually the ones who are going to go first, right? Because it makes more sense to replace them because they have a better ROI in terms of your technology investment.
Correct. And of course, people say that while there may be job loss of some types of jobs because of AI, there'll be many more jobs that will come up for people who understand AI.
Absolutely. I mean, every new technology also creates a massively new field. But 100 years ago, there used to be people in Berlin here whose job was to go around every night and light the gas lights. You know, we don't have those jobs anymore. Right? Yeah. And we're going to have a lot of those office jobs that are essentially just doing that, right? Like making someone's candle shine bright. We don't need those office jobs anymore either. Right? And so it's not that all jobs will be replaced by AI, but people who don't use AI will be replaced by those who do. Right? And so every job, like in the last 3 months, for example, I've like 3x some of my output just using ChatGPT for like menial tasks, and not just menial tasks, even things like I need to teach a workshop for 2 hours, go make me a rough outline based on the previous one that I'd given you before. And so it knows a little bit about me by now. And each of my ChatGPT chats, I have experts essentially. I have my copywriter who knows my blogs. I have my marketing writer who writes my website copy. Right, I have my, you know, Michelin star chef, you know, giving me suggestions as to what they could do with the food in my fridge right now. So I'm beginning to use these tools and seeing how much time it frees me up. Right, it used to take me 3 hours to write a blog. Now I can write it in 30. And it's still my voice and it's still my message. Right, but I can save myself a lot of the menial tasks with that. And I think this is the promise of what AI can do for people in their work.
Correct. And, you know, when you talk coaching, my next question is, how can coaching support individuals in adapting to new technologies and in the changing work environments?
Well, I mean, coaching is a big word, so people define it very differently. For me, the idea of coaching is that it supports you in thinking who you want to become next and figuring out how to get there or what's in the way. Right? So if I have a vision of who I want to become, right, a coach's job for me is to essentially support me as an individual in reaching that goal. Right? And so it's a very forward-oriented, future-oriented tool for self-cultivation. Right. And we all know how easy it is to break our promises to ourselves, right? And to not be accountable. Like we say, oh, we want to do this, and then we don't. Right? And having someone on your side, whether it is a coach or a mentor or guru, whatever person that you trust that actually is more interested in your personal development than, you know, the relationship, it's a good thing to have. And I think in this change of work, you know, to ask yourself the question, who do I want to become next, right? And have someone help you figure out the steps there can be really helpful.
Well said. And what, in your view, are some of the challenges and opportunities that arise from the gig economy and freelance work?
Well, I mean, the biggest challenge, honestly, is mental health. You know, I mean, I think it is people underestimate what it takes to be a freelancer, but it sounds romantic. You can work from anywhere, work anytime, you know, be a digital nomad, all these cool things that come with being freelancing, right? But freelancing also means that you spend a lot of time in business development on the brand called you, right? You have to continuously create that brand. You have to be out there. You have to be visible so people can find you. You have to take care of the people who've already found you and take care of that community. Right. And really the uncertainty of it is really stressful, right? Because you don't know, right? If you have a job and you get your paycheck every month, you know you're going to be fine for as long as the company decides that you're valuable. If you're a freelancer...
Sorry, go ahead. No, go ahead, please.
I was just gonna say, if you're a freelancer, you go have ups and downs, and those downs are pretty brutal sometimes. You know, I mean, one of my first startups, I lost all of my life savings because I thought, oh, I'm gonna keep it one more month. It's gonna be it. And I never made it. Right. And next thing I know, I was this close to homeless. And only because I had so many good connections in the world did I not end up in the street somewhere. Mm. Right. And so it can be very, very stressful to be in that world. Yeah. And so I think that's really the key, is to learn how to deal with ambiguity, learn how to deal with uncertainty, make sure you take care of yourself. You know what I mean? I think self-care is one of the key elements there, because nobody's doing it for you. Nobody decides that you should go on vacation. Like, I'm taking my first real vacation this summer. It's the longest I've done my whole adult life. Right? And it's only 3 weeks, but I'm like, I finally have the time to do 3 weeks off, or 4 weeks nearly. You know what I mean? I never had that ability, because I always had to either work, I either had the time or the money, right? But correct. Not both. Correct. So I learned that you have to create some good rituals for self-care here. Mm.
And do you see this whole gig economy, which started, I think, primarily because of COVID, do you see this becoming institutionalized and the young moving more and more to multiple jobs?
No, I think that actually was a trend that was already there before COVID. I mean, people like me have been doing it for 20 years in a way. Mm-hmm. I mean, so it was there, but it was still underground. And now COVID kind of opened up this new potential to say, I can work remotely. I can work in different places. I can also have less loyalty towards my company, because I'm not going to the office every day. I'm not seeing the same people every day that I have lunch with, that I have coffee with, that I have my chai with. Mm-hmm. But I don't have that personal connection as much. And so it's much easier to say, well, I work here, do these tests, and I work over there, and I do those tests, and I work over here, and I do those tests. And what has also changed is, because we have different technology available to us, we can individualize things more. Right? Mm-hmm. In the last century, we've kind of stretched the spectrum, where before the smallest unit was family, mm-hmm. and the largest was globalization. Now we stretch the spectrum to individual and planet. Right? Because now suddenly I can order my own customized sneaker shoes online, and everybody expects that I can also do that with my job. But I can also create my own custom experience for my life, because maybe my family is my priority, maybe my sports are my priority, maybe my whatever, traveling is a priority, whatever it might be for you. You can now create your own journey and your own adventure, because the barriers to entry are much lower. To create a business today is much easier. To create a website is done in 5 minutes with AI, among other things, right? So you can create things much more easily and have much less, you know, friction in terms of living this life, right? But you also, with much freedom comes much responsibility, then have to figure out how to manage all that.
Well said. Great response. Thank you. And Philip, what role, in your opinion, will diversity and inclusion play in shaping the future of work?
Well, I think it's ridiculous for it not to be a given in some ways, right? Because we're on this planet, and as far as I'm concerned, there's 8 billion people here. But as a kid in first grade, we learned about set theory in math, right? Where you have a set of all round things, or a set of all red things, or a set of all squares or circles. And I realized as a six-year-old that all designations are somewhat arbitrary, right? I can make any subgroup I want. You know, I mean, look at India, you could create a billion subgroups there, because, you know, the village from there to there has different gods and different cultures and different customs, and they're so different, right? And I mean, people forget a country like India is as diverse as the US, right? If you think about how many languages you have, how many cultures you have, how many orientations and values.
Correct.
Now we see each other on the planet, so we get to figure out how to integrate that on the planet, where it shouldn't matter where you come from, where you were born, what your parents' native language was, or what your skin color is, or what your gender is, or what your sexual orientation is. Those are really irrelevant topics, right? Because we all get to participate now. And as Marshall McLuhan said, there are no passengers in spaceship Earth. There's only crew, and we're all crew. Right? And so I can find that common denominator. And then after that, it's details that are interesting, because individuals are interesting, you know, and to be excited about learning about them is interesting. But other than that, all these distinctions are kind of pointless.
Interesting. The next few questions, Philip, are in your avatar as a coach. So my next question is that, given all the work that you've done as a coach, how has your own background supported your coaching philosophy, your style, and your values?
Well, I had an interesting split background, because I started programming when I was 10 years old. So I got into computers and databases and logical structures and entity relationship diagrams. And I was an enterprise architect for a large, you know, financial systems transformations. Mm-hmm. So that was this very linear, very technical mind that's very system oriented. And then the other thing that contributed to my education was that I was a very hyperactive child. Mm-hmm. You know, back then they just said Zappel Philipp in Germany, which means fidgety Philipp, you know, because I was always moving and always learning and always growing, and I had a hard time sitting still. Today they would call it ADHD. Fortunately, I didn't have that diagnosis back then. And instead of that, my dad just gave me a bunch of yoga and meditation tapes and said, here, learn this. And so that's when I started learning yoga and meditation and self-hypnosis and autogenic training, all these different things. And I started looking into, you know, gurus and shamans and anybody that knew anything about consciousness, right? Because I said, wow, what is this? And I woke up to myself in that sense. Mm. You know, the basic, you know, oh, here's a body, here's emotions, here's mind. And then, you know, tools like yoga that allow you to make sure your body is flexible and healthy and make sure your emotions calm down and you learn how to breathe properly, right? And that you can still your mind and meditate. You know, I mean, those kind of things have been tremendously helpful. And for the last 35 years now, I've been studying different tools from around the world that when you look at them might seem very drastically different, but then underneath it, it's all pretty much the same thing. Right. There's very like masculine and feminine aspects. There's masculine and feminine gods, or there's, you know, there's fire, water, air, earth. There's the different energies and, you know, different ways of how we can look at life. Right, some things are energizing and fiery. Some things are more calming and dissolving, like water. Some things are more, you know, separating, like a wind or like clarity. Right, there's different ways that keep repeating. Right, and so I found that there's some very basic underlying archetypes. You can look at even I use. Nearly everything I do, my whole business is structured in sevens, right? And I went with, you know, because I found that around the world, there's all these systems of sevens, like chakras, for example, right? You know, seven or eight, depending on how many, but about these systems of seven and eight that are around the world. And they're always kind of the same thing. And then you look at this and it's like, hey, if life creates like this, let me use some of the same frameworks to create innovation, to create new teams, to create new organizations. And it worked. And when I found that it worked, I'm like, cool, let's just keep it simple and use some of these same concepts. You know, there's different language for it around the world. There's different language, you know, in different times. But in the end, it's all very much very similar. Right? Mm. And there's some truths that people 2,000 years in India already knew about and had maybe a different language than the quantum physicists who expresses them today in a, you know, university in Princeton. Mm. But underlyingly, very similar concepts and very similar notions. So I mishmash everything together. Right? I borrow from the arts, I borrow from yoga, I borrow from different, you know, perennial wisdom traditions and from science, and look at where are the common patterns here.
Very interesting. And, you know, my next question is, most of us in our lives have people who shape us, who influence us. How were you shaped by people in your life, and how have they influenced you as a coach?
Oh, wow, that's a very loaded question. Because of course, it starts with my family and my parents. You know, they've shaped me tremendously. And, you know, both of them, for example, were into arts, but in different ways. Like my father liked Wagner and the high arts and the museum paintings and, you know, high level, beautiful things, opera, etc., symphonies. And my mom liked making things. You know what I mean? And so while my dad was very structured and linear, gave me a lot of philosophical underpinnings of what I'm doing, my mom was the one who was super practical and gave me, for example, a welding stick welder for my birthday when I was 13 and took me to the junkyard and said, go pick out some pieces and learn how to weld. Mm. And so I, you know, learned how to weld and made sculptures from it when I was a teenager. Yeah. And so there was a lot of privilege in that sense in my household that I had this exposure. I also had some really good teachers in the, you know, early days of my German education system. There were several teachers that I remember to this day who really shaped me, and several of my professors who really shaped me. And then the first people I worked with, right, my first coach, my first consulting mentors and program managers, and then really everybody I meet. You know, for me, every individual is an adventure. Every individual, like you were just sharing a little bit of your story earlier, and I have 1,000 questions too. I'm like, wow, you know, this, you did all of this. How cool is that? And what drives you and what motivates you and what excites you, right? And learning from that, from people, I'm learning from everybody I meet now, right? Because I look at every interaction I have as a potential for transformation, for mutual transformation. Mm-hmm. Right? I go into every conversation with who could I become here? And I also go into who could they become? And so I always assume the highest and best for them of who they could become and the highest best of what I could become. Mm-hmm. And then every interaction, even if you go buy a sandwich, can become something that uplifts you and uplifts the other person and makes this world a better place.
Correct. Wonderful. Philip, I have time for two more questions for you. The next question is on culture. And, you know, you understand culture well. You're a coach. We all come from different cultures in our families, in our communities, in the companies that we work in, from the countries that we are in. My question is, how does culture impact coaching?
Well, I think everybody has different, you know, triggers of, for example, let's take shame.
Yeah.
Right. But up in the, as a kid, you know, what is our orientation? Are certain things okay or not okay? Right. Or my, you know, focus on myself versus the community. But if you look at, for example, India, there's still a lot of people who grow up and the family is more important than them as an individual. Mm-hmm. Right. Because it's all about the family, making sure the family is okay. Right. And similarly, in America, right, there's this, you can be anything, you will be a star, you will be super special. Right. And there's this very, you know, individualistic focus.
Yeah.
Underneath that, I think if you think about it, culture, for me, the easiest word, because it's such a big word, for me, culture is how we do things around here, right? And how we do things around here is different in every family, in every team, in every organization, in pockets of the organization, right? There's all these little subcultures that decide on how we do things around here. Right? Even with ourselves, we have our own cultural operating system. I grew up in Germany, but then I lived in America and I lived in 20, 30 different countries in the world. I lived in India for a while. And they have all shaped me, right? I was just laughing the other day when it was really hot here and I was putting on my lungi, you know, and I'm in my shirt from LA, my, you know, Mexican shirt from LA. And I'm like, wow, you can take the boy out of LA in India, but you can't take the India or the LA out of the boy anymore. You know, I mean, I've already become some of this now, right? Yes. There's India inside of me all the way to, if you think about it, around the world, we all have mouth and we all have another hole at the end. In between, we have a 30-foot long worm, right? With about 1,200 different species who live inside of here. And an individual human is already a complex cultural entity, right? And the more we understand that for ourselves and are kind to ourselves around that and compassionate with our own quirks and idiosyncrasies and kind of weird things that we all do, the more compassionate and kind we can be to other people.
Very well.
And everybody just wants to take care of themselves and their family.
Well,
and sometimes they might have bad, weird ways to do this, but everybody has different ways.
Correct. Well said. And my last question, Philip, and this is for the many, many people who will listen to our conversation. What would you say are three lessons you would like individuals listening to our conversation, wanting to thrive in the future of work, to take back from our conversation, from your vast understanding?
Well, I think if I can sum it up, I would say self-care, self-regulation, and self-cultivation. Right? Mm-hmm. Make sure you take care of yourself. Because if you don't, you know, take care of yourself, nobody else will.
Right? Yeah.
And depression happens. And I just had a friend who had burnout because he was taking care of his family and his wife and his, you know, kids and his employer and the project and the client, but not about himself. And then next thing you know, he was in the, you know, totally depressed and his body wouldn't function anymore because he needed deep rest. Right. And so self-care is, I think, lesson number one. Lesson number two is self-regulation. Learn to become your own dopamine programmer, mm-hmm. right? Learn to become your own neuroprogrammer, because a lot of very highly paid people are prayed to do that with you all day long. Go clicky, 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 likey, 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 right? And we have to learn and also, you know, upset you or move you with ridiculous political messages or whatever. Learn to control your own neurology, mm-hmm. right? Through yoga, for example, right? Through those kind of tools. Learn breathing, learn to calm yourself down, learn to excite yourself, learn to shape habits. Mm-hmm. Right, so that you can then do the third thing, which is self-cultivation. Mm-hmm. Always think about who do you want to be next, right? Because you're not limited by your past, you're not limited by anything really, until you find out that you hit that limit. But go push that limit further and further. Really think about who could you become one day. If you think about your last day of life, you're going to look back at this life and go, wow, what an amazing adventure. And I'm so grateful for all the work I get to do here, for the people I get to support, for the future I help create, right? Because we can either be victims of the time or creators of time, right? And I would say self-cultivation is really having a vision of yourself, of who you want to become next, not to judge yourself by, because then of course you would fail, you know, because you're not that yet, but to appreciate, to motivate you every day to be like, this is who I want to become one day. When I leave this planet, this is a legacy I would like to leave behind.
Fantastic.
So that people speak my name for decades to come and say, what a wonderful thing that he was on Earth or she was on Earth.
Great response. Thank you. And on that note, on your three amazing lessons, self-care, self-regulation, and self-cultivation. Thank you, Philip, for speaking to me about your own journey. I was fascinated with how much time you have spent in India and how much you seem to understand India. You know, multiple cities in India, and of course, I love the way you referred to a lungi. Thank you for speaking to me about the future of work. Thank you also for speaking to me about different aspects of coaching. Thank you again, and good luck.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.